utterly unaware that anything remarkable had occurred. But what had in fact occurred was virtually indescribable. Every house was gone. Every house. No sign of life anywhere. Everything, everywhere was wet, wet with ocean water. In what had been the streets lay dead fish. Along the shoreline, human corpses bobbed in the brine like wine corks. One party of astonished discoverers was greeted by an old man stumbling across the soggy landscape, muttering tsunami. Over and over again, he kept saying tsunami, tsunami. And that one word, of course, told it all. The coast had been hit by a tidal wave. This one in particular, 100 feet high, 100 feet high, had obliterated 10,000 homes, had taken 27,000 lives. It had struck at the height of a Shinto festival, during which many were gathered on the beaches. The last sight they beheld was recalled by a handful of terrified survivors. At first, the sea was pulling away from the shore. For long, curious moments, reefs and sea life lay exposed on what had been the ocean floor. But then everyone looked up to see the advancing wall of water that appeared to stretch out forever in both directions along the coast. And the wall rose higher and higher until it was 100 feet high. And then with a burst of incredible speed, it rolled forward over the naked seabed and crashed into the coast, inundating it. And that was the great tsunami of June 15, 1896. Such phenomena could not be anticipated a century ago, and that accounts for the overwhelming death toll in northeastern Japan. Yet modern seismology enables us to predict precisely where and when a tidal wave will strike. Since earthquakes at sea are what trigger them, scientists can calculate a tidal wave's speed and force based on the strength and location of the earthquake from which it sprang. The biggest on record, for example, struck Valdez, Alaska in March of 1964. The earthquake that spawned that one measured 8.5 on the Richter. The wave itself was 200 feet high. And yet, despite the awesome appearance and destructive capability of so-called tsunami, there is something ultimately insidious about them. They fly across the ocean surface with terrifying speed, between 400 and 500 miles an hour. So how have they been sneaking up on us out there for centuries? The answer is in the story of the Japanese disaster you have just relived. For you see, the men who came home to find home gone were not hunters journeying from the hills back to the coast. They were fishermen returning from a day at sea. But they had no way of knowing what had happened. Even though the tidal wave had passed directly under their fishing boats. For you see, traveling in the open ocean, even hundreds of miles an hour, a tsunami is unlikely to attract much attention, if any. The cataclysm of June 1896 was no exception. In that, until the tidal wave reached the shallow water near land, it had raced across the sea as a wave only 12 inches high. And now you know the rest of the story.
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL brought to you by Slow Heating and Air, your local reliable heating and air expert. Call 805-423-5119.
238-5775. 238-KPRL. Sound Off continues on KPRL, the North County's number one choice for news, talk, and sports. This is Sound Off on the right choice, KPRL.
Okay, we're back. Feel free to call in at any time and interrupt us. Although there is a note here, Darsha. I don't know if you saw this. What does that say?
Am I supposed to be able to respond to this?
It says, don't interrupt one another. But if you're a guest, if you're calling in, you're allowed to interrupt us, but we just can't interrupt each other. Right?
So when I was here all by myself.
Is that right?
It was wonderful.
But I'm not interrupting you, am I?
I had no interruptions.
All right.
I only have my own voices, and those are familiar voices.
So before you were so rudely interrupted.
Yes.
By yourself. Hey, I wanted to start out. I got this great article that was sent to me, and it I'm going to not read the whole thing, but it goes back 60 years to when Khrushchev visited the United States, and it was a statement that he made, and he says, "Your children's children will live under communism. You Americans are so gullible. No, you won't accept communism outright, but we will keep feeding you small doses of socialism until you will finally wake up and find you already have communism. We have not we will not have to fight you. We will so weaken your economy until you will fall like overripe fruit into our hands. The democracy will cease to exist when you take away from those who are willing to work and give to those who would not. And that was on September 29th, 1959. And so the article goes on and says, socialism leads to communism. How do you create a socialist state? There are 8 levels of control. 1, healthcare. Control healthcare and you control the people. 2, poverty. Increase the poverty level as high as possible. Poor people are easier to control and will not fight back if you are providing everything for them. 3, debt. Increase the debt to an unsustainable level. That way you are able to increase taxes and this will produce more poverty. 4, gun control. Remove the ability to defend themselves from the government. That way you're able to create a police state. 5, welfare. Take control of every aspect, food, housing, income of their lives, because that will make them fully dependent on the government. 6, education. Take control of what people read, listen to, and take control of what children learn in school. In my opinion, that's probably...
Check.
That's the next generation. And as Reagan says, you're always just one generation from losing your republic. 7, religion. Remove the belief in God from the government and schools because the people need to believe in only the government knowing what is best for them. And then 8, class warfare. Divide the people into the wealthy and the poor. Eliminate the middle class. This will cause more discontent and it will be easier to tax the rich with the support of the poor. And that's I think, where we are in California now.
With
the billionaires tax. I was looking at the statewide qualified ballot measures. And so you've got, I mentioned at the beginning of the show before you graced us with your presence, we're looking at about $44 billion in bond measures. And I haven't even finished adding them all up, but you've got permanent funding for schools and healthcare. That's $5 billion to $15 billion. Loan programs for middle-income buyers of qualified new homes. Bonds for immunology research. That's $500 million annually for 25 years. Then it goes on and on and on. Then, of course, you got the billionaire's tax. The class warfare is here.
And so the billionaire's tax, is that in theory going to offset a lot of the additional spending? They don't quite think it through.
Well, there's already been, I think it's already estimated that the California economy has lost $1 trillion because I don't know why the billionaires just don't want to sit here and be taxed.
But it's not billionaires because everyone realizes that when... you have the corporations, and even if it's, big corp, when those companies leave California, where do they go? They go to other states or they go to other jurisdictions that are not being taxed as high and don't have the same regulations and don't have all of these oppressive, non-business friendly that we're all dealing with. So when one company goes, it's not just the CEO who might be a billionaire. It's all of the employees, all of the services that are affiliated with those employees. And so it's a huge, it is exponential when you talk about that.
Yeah. What cracks me up is the short memory of the left. It was probably just before COVID, and you had the state of Texas and the state of Florida that put billboards up around San Francisco and Los Angeles recruiting businesses to leave California for a lower tax environment.
How dare they?
And now it's almost as if the California state legislature is on the side of Texas and Florida. We'll help encourage them to leave.
Well, the mentality, I've been dealing with these people, and the mentality is literally, we are depending on your you as a funding source. We are depending on your taxes. We've taken it into consideration with all of our legislature, and you are not a legally allowed to leave this state because we have factored in your income and you are ours. You're controlled by the state. Talk about subject to the jurisdiction thereof. I mean, it's very...
I just think it's selfishness that we are not, as the dwindling middle class of the state of California, more willing to give to the bureaucrats in order to help them sustain the lifestyles that they've
Stop,
become
Penny,
accustomed
I'm gonna
to.
Reach over and cut your mic.
So she's got she's got her new California shirt on.
State I got a, Doge.
A new California
the
state.
The Doge.
I got another good article for you. That I didn't bring up earlier before we were graced by your
well,
presence.
Well, while you're finding that, I would like to bring up the now in the news again and again and again, the $22 billion that the state of California, Gavin Newsom, has withheld payment. That is the unemployment insurance fraud. We'll call it that, even though a court decide what's fraud, but it is amounts that have were paid in error or without any documentation. So it's not $22 billion. What they agreed upon was an amount, and what is paid back to the federal government is 15%. But what Newsom did is last year made a law so that all of the employers in the state of California have to contribute to this unemployment insurance fund to be able to pay back for the all the monies that they sent out all over the world, literally all over the world. And my sources, New California State people, indicate that it's not $22 billion. That would be 15% of it. So they're looking at more like $200 billion, $300 billion, maybe even more. That was paid out in unemployment insurance that was never verified. They actually turned off the adjudication cycle. So all of those monies have been paid out, and the federal government says, hey, we'll agree upon $22 billion that is now due back to the federal government. What has the state of California been doing with all that the employers have been paying in? Every single employer has to pay for every employee $24. Then it went to $48, $52. You know, anyway, it keeps increasing every year. In theory, it's to pay back that $22 billion of fraud. How much has Newsom paid on that?
Zip.
There you go. So the federal government now looks at the state of California as a... you know, having a liability out there. What does the federal government have over the state of California? All of the funding that comes from the federal government. And the government has the right to RST, reduce, suspend, or terminate contracts, and even claw back funds that have been sent to California when they have this debt that hasn't been paid.
Well, that, in my opinion, that's been a long time coming, and what I'm frustrated by is the fact that that threat has been out there for, it was out there for 4 years under the first Trump administration. It's been out there for almost 2 years now, but they're still getting the money. And so I agree with you.
Enforcement.
The best weapon the federal government has for ensuring that the state of California complies with federal law and the U.S. Constitution, by the way, is to hold the money. Take it away from them. And I'm hoping that that's going to happen soon, especially in the education sector. Caller, you are on the air.
Welcome.
Hello.
Yeah, good afternoon. I got cut off, like, I think it was the commercial before last.
Oh, okay.
Before I was making my point about the Section 1 of the 14th Amendment, the most important point, I think, is the statement that is they have to have a residency to reside in the state of, the subject to the jurisdiction thereof, you know, United States, and the state where they reside. And that reside is a legal residents.
I agree with you. Where we are now, and even California election code has said that even if you are homeless, you reside at a physical location in that moment, and that you can actually register from your, let's say, tent on the corner of walk and don't walk. You just have to be able to describe the location, and that becomes your residence. So we've so blurred the terms that when, I mean, I think it's clear, you think it's clear, everyone, if they actually are critical thinking, think that it's clear that a residence means, you know, somewhere where you might be intending to return.
Okay, sorry to interrupt, but so a million Chinese that fly down to Guam within the past, like, say, 10 years, they claim residency in Guam, give birth, and then go back to China. And in 35 years, they can be president of the United States?
They don't even have to claim residence.
I disagree with that.
They don't even have to claim residence.
Mm-hmm. You said you have to, you know, even homeless around here have to claim some sort of residency to get benefits or the whatever. So I just don't know what that means. You know, I mean, if I guess Congress has got to spell it out. It would have been a lot easier for the Supreme Court to just ban it and then let Congress come back and say, okay, this is what it really meant. And then we can go from there. But something's got to be done, because now there's billboards up around the world saying, hey, check this out. They've got an open plan in the United States to, you know, for all pregnancies.
Yeah, I had seen and heard that was going on. I was calling it a new industry. Perhaps you misunderstood what I was saying, because I'm agreeing with you. I agree that it's clear to me that if somebody is here, has come across our border in whatever way, planes, trains, or automobiles, or walking, or swimming, whatever it is, if they have come here, and coming here, they have disobeyed the laws of the United States, that is considered illegal, and that you are not subject to the jurisdiction thereof, because you are not a citizen. You have not come here legally. Now, if someone's on vacation and they happen to give birth, I believe that they're a citizen of wherever their mother is a citizen of, if you want to limit it to the mother.
This was when there was 1864 horseback. There was no, you know, planes coming and going, a million people every, you know, year. This is insane to think that that's what they meant. And believe me, I've read studies where there's over a million Chinese people that are living in China that have birth certificates. So it's a matter of time before we got to deal with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, the natural born citizen, I think, could also be clarified at the same time. So the principles about who can run for president, who can serve in Congress, etc. So president does have that natural born citizen, or a citizen when the country was founded. So
program and listening to me, I don't want to take any much more of your time, and you guys have a great day. Thank you.
Hey, appreciate
all right,
it.
Thanks for calling in.
One point to what the caller was talking about, when they talked about subject to the jurisdiction of, and if you go and you read Clarence Thomas's opinion on, or his dissent opinion, his argument, and I agree with it, is that meant loyalty to a government. It had nothing to do with where you physically resided. It had to do with loyalty to a government, which was why Native Americans were not given U.S. citizenship until the 1920s, because they had their nation, they had their tribe, and their loyalty was to that Indian nation or that tribe, not to the United States of America. And so that's, in my opinion, what that meant subject to the jurisdiction thereof was. And that comes out of Clarence Thomas's dissent view. Now, you also were talking about birth certificates. Did you read what Texas is proposing in the Texas State House?
No, actually, I haven't seen that. Please.
They're talking about if you cannot prove that you're a U.S. citizen, they will not issue you a birth certificate in the state of California. So you have nothing to document that you were.
In the state of Texas or the state of California?
I'm sorry, in the state of Texas. So I think that's a brilliant idea. That's not a federal, that doesn't fall under federal law at all. That falls under state jurisdiction. But, you know, again, if you have 50 states doing 50 different things, it again begs that the federal government step in and standardize stuff.
We do have the E-Verify system. That's a federal system. You have the, when you become employed, you have the I-9 form. Now, and that has proof somebody, of...
Yeah, but somebody's told me that the state of California does not allow that. Maybe somebody could call in and tell us that.
Does not allow it?
Does not allow E-Verify because, again, you might prove that somebody's not here legally, which could cause work for somewhere in Sacramento.
We do know that there were 17,000, 18,000 commercial driver's licenses that were issued up in Yuba City at the DMV, and they were not taking all the tests, we'll just say.
Shocked.
And were given driver's licenses.
After the break, I got to bring up what they're talking about for English now in the state of California.
All right,
we'll be back.
Press one.
Two first. Because up, I cut her off.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Stuart Varney, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Stocks showing small gains today. The Dow S&P 500 and the NASDAQ up 0.3%. Carnival Cruises has begun building its newest next-generation ship today. Key features include an unprecedented number of ocean-view balcony cabins. The housing market may be picking up this summer. The Wall Street Journal quotes a mortgage data company as saying that the volume of people locked in to buy homes rose to its highest level in more than 3 years in June. That's up 14% from a year earlier. The FDA may modify regulations so we are less dependent on foreign-made medications. The agency would streamline processes for U.S. companies so they can turn out more drugs while toughening the regulations for foreign manufacturers. Business news twice an hour on Fox News Headlines 24/7. I'm Roger Stern.
Most investments today feel like second jobs. Real estate? You're a landlord. Stocks? You're a day trader. Crypto? You're a full-time researcher. You've got a life to live. Your investment should help you live it. That's why more Americans are choosing gold. Noble Gold has helped thousands protect their future with real physical gold. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com to get your free wealth protection kit. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Do you use propane for your home or business? Family-owned and operated, Delta Liquid Energy has provided local area residents with dependable and courteous propane service since 1936. From home heating and cooking to powering your irrigation engine pump or forklift, propane can do it all. Don't forget their location. Paso Robles refills propane bottles of all sizes Monday through Friday and has a dump station for your RV. Learn more. Call Delta Liquid Energy 805-239-0616 or go online DeltaLiquidEnergy.com.
The California Mid-State Fair in Paso Robles is proud to present 15-time ACM and CMA Group of the Year, Old Dominion. July 15th, the California Mid-State Fair presents Old Dominion with special guests Dasha and Annie Bosco. Tickets on sale now, MidStateFair.com. One incredible night of country music you don't want to miss.
The Sound Off lines are open at 238-5775. 238-KPRL. The North County's listening to you on Sound Off.
Okay, we're back. Since I've been giving Darsha a hard time, I'm going to start off with an article that I think she'll really enjoy. It's called The Secession Wave. Americans are tired of crime, chaos, and zero representation. Across the country, frustration with deep blue urban centers is driving voters to consider something once unthinkable, seceding from their own states. She's shocked that I'm reading this. What began as... Read the note. What began as scattered ballot measures in Illinois has grown into a multi-state conversation about political representation, taxation, and cultural identity, stretching from the Midwest to the Pacific Northwest to even California. So this article, it says 40 counties in Illinois have approved measures to explore breaking away from the Chicago-dominated Cook County.
So is that actually seceding? So when...
Well, what did West Virginia do from Virginia?
They formed a new state.
Which they seceded from the state government.
I disagree. I think that they reorganized the Virginia government and they accepted the petition from the Western Virginians so that West Virginia could be a state. It went to the president's desk. That time was Abraham Lincoln. And Abraham Lincoln asked the question, was there a vote? And there was a vote. Virginia became a state.
Not in the U.S. Congress, though. He approved it without following the constitutional process.
Okay, well, let's talk
about... it was a time of war, so it was okay. But I'm trying to throw you a bone, Darsha.
I know, I appreciate that. Let's talk about the California Constitution.
I thought this would be a good segue for you to get into, like, voter integrity and all the...
Like Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution?
Keep in mind, I have the mic buttons over here.
I know. Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution. What does it say? It's the guarantee clause. The United States shall guarantee to every state in the Union three things. One, a republican form of government. Two, freedom from invasion, which is what we've just been talking about. And three, protection against domestic violence. So, Article 4, Section 4, which comes right after Article 4, Section 3, talking about how states become a state.
Let me read another paragraph from this article. So it says, most of California outside the coastal metros is red, yet Sacramento funnels billions of our money into deep blue areas like Los Angeles, Oakland, and San Francisco. They're funding homeless encampments stretching for miles, open drug use in the streets, fraud-ridden social programs, sanctuary city policies, crime-related costs, public transit and housing subsidies. They're burning through tax dollars, and the problems only seem to be getting worse and worse. If you go back to that Khrushchev article I pulled from, there's the snowball effect where once the collapse begins, it increases at a cyclic rate.
So during the quote Biden administration, how many people came across the border that would, I believe, fit the definition of invasion. So they say it's, you know, 20 million. No, it's probably more like 50 million, 70 million, 100 million. How many of those were children?
How many are accounted for?
Right.
Which is a different topic.
Right.
But
that is an invasion. And when you have birthright citizenship, when people can come across the border, give birth, and then you have citizens, isn't that also an invasion? Yeah. It can be.
But doesn't it take a legislative body? If you want to follow the Republican form of government, it takes a legislative body, and in Illinois, it's counties that are voting to secede from Illinois. So, has that happened at all in California, anywhere?
California itself had an initiative out there to become its own country.
I know,
and
but
there is
you're not
no
answering my question. I want to know if
county.
There are counties that have actually started doing petitions. I know there was the state of Jefferson. Now there's something else up there where they want to form up with part of Eastern Oregon. But it's...
Might I remind you, these are the very same things that new California state has been promoting, because 90% of the territory of California, who is legislatively saying that they're a sanctuary state. There's no such thing as a sanctuary state if you were following the United States Constitution.
And we get back to at that point too, the federal government needs to just cut funding.
So follow the money. When you have all of the fraud, waste, and abuse going on in California, should we start in with the... That's why I was alluding to the unemployment insurance. You have the rail system, the high-speed rail. Where has that money gone? The homelessness industrial complex, where has that money gone? You have all of these projects. I just saw one today that was about a sidewalk, probably about a 6 by 6 foot concrete sidewalk that cost $900,000+ to install. You know, at every level, you just get to where you say, you know, this is past the point of being not even ridiculous, but it's fraudulent. It's use of taxpayer money. And when you have people in legislation that are, it's other people's money, and we have it locally, we have it at every level of any kind of public or governmental, quasi-governmental, NGOs even, using taxpayer-funded at some point in time. It's not, even a grant is not free money. That's taxpayer-funded monies. And they need to be using a lot more. We have to have some tool to be able to hold people accountable to that. So with the bond measure that's coming up in Paso Robles, at Paso Robles Joint Unified School District, they're even saying that it's $200 million, and we've run the numbers, and it's $405 million minimum that would need to be paid back by the taxpayers in the Paso Robles School District. So $405 million. And for what? We don't even know what it's for. They just figure, you know, well, we better put it out there because we're going to need it.
Well, I know people, most normal people aren't probably watching the board meetings on YouTube. Although my wife and I have started a drinking game, or she started the drinking game. I don't participate because I'm on the dais.
Are you doing the bingo card, you know, each time they mention?
Every time somebody on the board says, I'm really excited about this project. Every time, you know, they say excited, you know, she takes a sip of wine as she watches the school board. But at two board meetings ago, you know, I called out the fact that in the bond measure language, which is posted on the county website now, but they won't even say shall or will when they list out the projects. They say may, and they openly, you know, Loftus and Pawlowski both openly said, well, we don't want to be locked into doing these projects. Well,
It's other people's money.
You know, you're making a contract with the community, and you're saying we're going to do X, maybe, unless we change our minds and decide we want to do Y, Z, or A, B, or D. You know, it's just it.
If it's so needed,
this is why nobody
spell it out.
This is why nobody trusts government anymore. So I'll get into more of that, you know, in the fall, because this thing has got, somebody's got to put a stake in this thing's heart and kill it and make them go back and start over on this and come up with some logical plans. Because even when you look at the layout of the high school, they're going to have to demolish half the high school practically in order to build these buildings. And how are you going to have classes? You know, it took 3 years for them to do Bauer spec. You know, and they had to build temp campuses. I mean, the whole thing is just, it's a bad idea.
Why not? So Almond Acres came in under budget and on time and under time.
They didn't have to work under prevailing wages, and they didn't have to work under DSA.
Okay, so maybe there's a way where there are extra buildings that can be built at Almond Acres.
Well, no, here, I mean, my thought is, I would rather, if they're focused on CTE stuff, which I'm all for, I'm just not for this plan.
Which is?
Career technical education. Mm-hmm. So it's vocational ed stuff. I'm all for that.
Yep.
Rent building. You know, go out and rent.
There's a lot of...
You don't need to ask for $205 million in order to rebuild something for CTE. You've got empty... We have declining enrollment. We have an empty campus. We have a partially used facility over there. They want to basically abandon the Culinary Arts Center.
How many millions was that?
Honestly, that was the 2006 bond measure. Mm-hmm. You know, if I were king for a day... Which, because we're a constitutional republic, will never happen, Darsha. But let me dream. But if I were king for a day, I would say, okay, let's move all the CTE stuff over there where the Culinary Arts Center is. You've got the wood shop there for the district. You've got your mechanic stuff. Instead of trying to replicate this stuff everywhere, centralize it there. You've got, you know, the steel fabrication place over there. You've got the fire and training center right there. And there's talk about trying to do first responder.
Down the street.
There's talk about trying to do first responder CTE stuff. You still have the culinary arts stuff right there. I mean, there's a lot of things that's centralized right there.
And it's a district property, and there's...
Yeah. And you know, it's not... You don't have to really rebuild anything. You can...
Training to be bus drivers.
You can clean it up, but it's just... I don't know. The intent, in my opinion, is they just really want to have a slush fund of $205 million.
I think they think that they can control one more election.
I don't agree with you on that. Because they don't think it in that way. It's pride and hubris on their part. It's a sense of it's a sense of entitlement. I mean, what's been created in the state of California is basically a bureaucratic trust fund baby mentality. You know, have you ever grown up or lived around kids that were trust fund babies?
Were you a trust fund baby? I was not, I assure you. Okay.
But what do trust fund babies do? They blow through their trust fund. And that's exactly what the bureaucrats have done in the state of California. It's a sense of entitlement. It's a mindset that I am entitled to more and more and more. Because, you know, in air quotes, I am a servant. You know, you've got servants on the Paso Robles Joint Unified School District cabinet and staff that are making $200,000 to $300,000 a year.
As servants.
As servants. I would like to be that kind of a servant. You know, as a battalion commander in combat, I was making like $120,000 a year. You know, my pension is half of what, you know, some of these people are making in the state of California. And so, essentially, it's that trust fund baby mentality. We got to get more money because otherwise we're going to run out. We're going to lose the lifestyle that we've become accustomed to.
So maybe there are things that people that the community would be willing to pay for. And I think that it can be done through fundraising, community projects. I don't think there's anyone that thinks that our children aren't important or that educating our children is not important. I think everyone thinks that way. But the point is that you have a group of people who have been I'll say selected for that office, and they're doing exactly how they have been, why they're there. And I think that mentality needs to change. It's not so much that they're entitled. It's that they have a way of thinking that either the people that have promoted them or the people that are surrounding them think that, you know, this is best for everyone and what I think is best for you. And I want to implement that because I know what's best.
All right. Well, the Queen of Conspiracy gets the last word before the break. We're back in a minute.
Painting, we get it. Hiring contractors can be frustrating. Missed calls, no callbacks, endless waiting for even a price. We do things different. You can book your quote right on the spot. And to top that off, you will have a detailed quote and price before we leave. Painting is easier with Peak.
Hi, I'm Seth Peak.
And I'm Ryan Peak.
And we're the Peak Brothers. From cabinet painting to interior painting.
Exterior painting, both residential and commercial.
We're your go-to family-owned and operated painting company serving all of Slo County. We look forward to working with you. To learn more and book your appointment, visit Peak Painting at peekpainting.com.
Lint Patrol specializes in dryer vent cleaning. You can trust Dylan with Lint Patrol to keep your vents clean and safe, and this helps your dryer run more efficiently and reduces the risk of a house fire. Dylan has over 6 years of appliance preventative maintenance experience and is knowledgeable in all things appliance care. This is an affordable, simple way to help protect your home. Contact Dylan today at 805-975-5176 or visit lintpatrolca.com.
We're arguing over who found this next article first. Darsha wants the credit for it, so I'll give her the credit. So the article is U.S. Department of Justice Civil Rights Letter warning elections officials in all 50 states subject to criminal prosecution if non-citizens vote. So this has appeared. It was in California Globe, which is the one that I'm gonna cite from, and then it was also in Just the News with John Solomon. But there's obviously a ramp up from the Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Supreme Court leading up to the midterms, and it's pretty interesting in my opinion. Just in the articles in the California Globe, another one, Arizona among six states to receive DOJ election monitors ahead of primary. There's another one, open letter to California AG Bonta requesting investigation in the 2026 Los Angeles mayoral election. But definitely I think the feds are ramping up.
So what's interesting to me is that we're finally getting to the civil rights violations. So if my vote is diluted or canceled by someone who is ineligible to be registered to vote, then it is a civil rights violation because my constitutional rights have now been violated or lessened.
Yeah, you lose your vote. It's canceled out. And that's essentially why it's falling under the Civil Rights Division and Hermeet Dhillon. Letters have gone out, you know, and she states that specifically. But, you know, the question I still have in this is, how are you going to prove? You're going to have to prove intent here if you're going to go after them criminally. And actually, that's what she's saying that they're going to do.
It's not as difficult as you might think, because there have been several notices that have been sent out, and even New California State had sent out to every county in California. There are 58 counties. Every county was served with a letter indicating that if there are ineligible voters that have voted, that that can be contested under Elections Code 16-100D, and it would make the election null and void, essentially, if you want to look at it that way. And so Harmeet Dhillon going forward saying, if you have not removed ineligible voters from the voter roll, that constitutes a felony. That it's not just having them on there, it's also that you haven't actively removed them. And there are multiple federal agencies that have all of this data as far as Health and Human Services has the citizenship, whether or not they're naturalized. You have Medi-Cal has been giving out monies and food and services to our sanctuary state, ineligible, illegal, we'll call it, undocumented, use whatever word you want. But so there are multiple agencies that have the citizenship as an issue where you can determine whether or not someone is a citizen.
Yeah, what's interesting in the when you read the actual letter that was sent out, the other thing they highlight is the fact, I'll just read, federal law mandates that state and local election officials properly maintain election records and undertake certain actions to ensure that only eligible U.S. citizens cast votes in elections for federal office. So it's not just an issue, in my opinion, of being a U.S. citizen, the word eligible there.
Correct. So if I move to another county, I should no longer be
on...
Or another state. I should no longer be on the voter rolls of San Luis Obispo County.
But has California provided any of those requested election records?
No. California, it has been requested by the DOJ, Harmeet Dhillon specifically, that California, and I think there are 17 states now, who are not providing the voter rolls for the state to the federal government.
Right.
So upcoming, we have a federal election electing congressional seats. That's considered a federal election. And so at that point, the federal government says, hey, we have requested. It's not a request. It's more of a demand. And you are not providing them, therefore we can withhold funding and we can have criminal action against you, civil and criminal action.
Yeah, I know. I'm not sure if it applies to us here in the People's Republic, but I know in certain states you've had federal judges that have stepped in and sided with the state, saying that they do not have to provide those records to the federal government. And when you read through this letter, it says, in addition to the Civil Rights Division's authority to seek injunctive relief for violations of these laws, which are the refusal to provide evidence that they're maintaining accurate election records, it also states that we are also authorized to prosecute criminal violations. And then it lists out all the U.S. code, which I'm sure you know by heart, so I won't repeat them.
I do know some of them.
I don't doubt that. But again, it's going to get down to the timeline. They being the left are going to drag this out as long as they can to impact the November election. And let's finish up on that. Let's talk about what are you thinking? How are you feeling, Darsha? Duchess of Doubt.
Thank you for asking.
How are you feeling about the upcoming elections in November?
Well, here are my concerns. I actually get very, very frustrated with some numbers that come out of our county where 3,313 reply envelopes, we'll call them ballots. Some of them didn't have ballots in them, and that's why they were rejected, but they were rejected. And a good number of those 3,300 were about 2,900 were because it was too late. That's what it's described as, where they didn't have a postmark on the reply envelope. And likely that was from people putting them in the mailboxes, and all of our mail in San Luis Obispo County goes down to the Goleta, Santa Barbara, Stork Road post office and comes back up. And it may not have gotten a postmark. It might have the distribution center's date as being June 3rd because it doesn't get down there until the day after, then has to come back up. And it wouldn't have had necessarily a postmark that says June 2nd, 2026. So those are considered, even though they were received within the 7 days after Election Day that it can be received, it wasn't postmarked by June 2nd. And so 2,900 people, in theory, sent their ballot in or mailed their ballot in, and it's being rejected. So that's 2,900 voters that somehow their vote has not been eligible to be cast. And I have a huge issue with that, especially if every single one of those 3,313 people, instead of returning their reply envelope, had gone into their precinct on election day, voted in person, their vote would have been counted. So I am going to continue preaching. For 5.5 years, I said the most secure way you can vote in San Luis Obispo County when we still have precincts is to go to your precinct on election day, vote in person with a paper ballot. And what I'd like to get to is where those paper ballots are counted at the precinct that day, and we have results that day. How about that? We've traded our security for convenience, and we need to change our behavior in order to be able to secure our elections. I believe someday we will get to where we have in-person voting again, just like we did for 200 years. It worked for 200 years.
You know, when I was a poll watcher in the 2002 when Pablo Uribe was elected president in Colombia, they still vote by in-person. You have to show ID, and it's a very simple ballot. It has a picture of the two candidates and their name underneath. So, but it always cracks me up. You know, that's a third world country, and oh, I didn't check to see what's the countdown on the Secretary of State.
Today.
Is it today that we get the answer from Shirley N. Weber, PhD, our illustrious secretary?
Dr. Shirley Weber, yes. Really, to sum it up, the elections processes that we have in the state of California right now, there are two major areas of issue. One is the voter rolls, who's eligible to vote. And two is that we have, and that there's mail-out ballots to all of those people. And two is that we then have machines that are counting. And machines, I even have 29-minute video of top-level Democrats saying machines can be hacked. We watched it happen. You know, we saw it there. Even Kamala Harris and Ted Lieu and Amy Klobuchar and Hillary Clinton all saying, no, we can't use the machines. It was back in 2018 when it didn't go the way they wanted it to go. And so you have 100% mailing out of these ballots to everywhere, no chain of custody. We don't know who's on the rolls. We can't verify that they're eligible to be voters. And then we have tabulation machines that have the ability to be accessed remotely, whether or not they are, they have the ability to be accessed remotely. We have to close out both sides of that, show up in person, ready to vote, and we'll get back to where we can actually trust our elections process.
And when you look at a lot of the countries, and this is something that constantly concerns me in this nation, or our nation. But when you look at countries like France, for instance, France in the 1960s and early 70s had mail-in ballots, and they did away with them completely. And it was out of concern of voter integrity.
Imagine that.
And it was out of concern that it was going to lead to civil war because you had a rising communist movement there. All right. That's it for today. I do have one question for Chris and Kevin. Whoever sat here this morning, the microphone smells like beer. So I don't know what's going on at 5 a.m. here, but I got some questions. All right, have a
great
weekend.
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL was brought to you by Lynn Patrol, specializing in dryer vent cleaning. Don't overwork your dryer or let your vent start a fire. Contact Dylan at LynnPatrolCA.com or call 805-975-5176.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.
It's 2 o'clock.